From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls. A very special postcard from Poprad, looking at ways of how you can survive in the next year with myself and Lee and Mark, actually cutting back, but not necessarily cutting back that badly. We're moving on to cars, and because it's actually something that Mark brought up earlier, what we're going to try and do is put all these tips together on one big document, and we'll splatter them around all of our different websites, so you can all have a little aid memoir, which might just save you a few pennies down the track a little bit.
Good idea.
I must also say hi to the guys over in Texas as well, and Replay Radio. Now, next one is, and this is just bonkers to do it, don't drive your car 500 metres to the shops. It costs you a fortune, and it can break your car.
Yeah, and it's not so, and it's not even so good for your health either.
No, it's not, actually. Because the worst time, the most fuel is used in your car when you start it up.
That's right.
It pours neat petrol almost into the engine. It uses the most, especially in the winter. And the worst thing you can do with a car in the winter is short journeys. For example, people, again, this maybe comes up on your site, Mark, where people have what they think are problems with the third emergency services, as they're often called, the breakdown services, mm-hmm. where they have to come out. And all these guys do is charge it, put a little bit of power into the battery, and the car's off again. Why does it happen? Because it takes often 10 kilometres for you, having started the car up, to charge the battery up. If you haven't done that amount of kilometres, after a short period of time, your battery goes dead. There's nothing wrong with the battery. You don't need to buy a new one.
No.
Don't buy a new one.
Don't buy a new car because your battery's gone flat. You don't get a new battery.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. And I'm going to whinge at this point about cars. Try this on.
Oh, no. Are you going to talk about Megan?
Yes. Megan, well, Megan went down the tubes the other day. The headlight bulb went. Now, I'm quite good with this stuff. You know, I've built cars, I've built racing engines, I've done all this stuff. And I go to the car and I go, oh, where do you put the bulb in then? So I'm looking. And
was it a rear bulb or a front bulb?
Front bulb.
Oh, right.
Front bulb in a Megan.
And this is all sounding a bit chatty. Your front bulb or your bottom bulb?
Slightly Freudian. And now put yourself in the position of, you know, a 65, 70-year-old lady who's driving down the road, and it's an offence to have a broken headlight. So she stops the car, looks at it, and says, well, how do I change the bulb? Do you know how you have to do it?
You have to
get screwdrivers out. You actually physically unscrew the top of the light, thank you, Mr. Renault, push the light forward, then you can get into the back to change the... You can't expect an OAP to do that kind... Whoever designed that is barking mad.
No, they run a car repair business.
Yes.
So they want to get all the spares business.
Yeah. €9 for a light bulb, I just don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. Do you ever get any... Does that come up on the site, Mark, of yours?
I haven't come across those kind of things, I have to say, but it is ridiculous. I thought that all headlights now were replaced simply by undoing a clip at the back of the headlight nacelle or whatever you want to call it.
That's not the case anymore. You have to physically loosen, take two screws out, ease the light forward, then get to the bit at the back that's on quite a strong clip, and then change the light bulb.
That sounds a bit like my old British Leyland cars of the 1960s.
I should say thank you to the guy at Renault in Poprad, because he said, we have so much trouble with this, I'll just change it for you, pay for the light bulb. Fair enough. Nice. Yeah, which isn't so bad.
Yeah. Right. I've got problems with Michael Mondeo as well.
Oh,
I don't know how much... And really, when you think... Like, sorry, Mark, Michael Mondeo is my car. It's a porn star car. It's into rubber. And it's broken. It's got clutch problems. Now, how much is that going to cost me? If you think the clutch is the most important part in a car... And you're going to have to replace it, and it's going to cost me hundreds and hundreds of pounds.
No, you can buy a clutch plate. Do it yourself. Excuse me. This is where we've got so used to the fast food mentality.
The fast clutch mentality.
Yeah. There are places in the UK where you can hire a workshop for an hour or so to do jobs on your car when where there are actually sensible technicians managing the places. And I'm not going to mention names, but they are out there. And you can actually do a lot of car work which is not going to contravene any sort of MOT work or anything like that, and save yourself a lot of money. Equally,
you have to take into consideration the human element of that statement.
Oh, sorry.
That's true. I mean, if we're back to the little old lady again, you know.
Yes, well, yeah,
that's the little old lady.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's try something that you can all do yourselves. Doesn't matter what age you are. Check out your old electrical appliances, because old electrical appliances, and this really applies to things like electric heaters as well, where you had the old-fashioned bar heaters that were about as useful as a chocolate fire guard. A new one will be much more cost-effective to run in terms of not using electricity. Have a look at the appliances. We tend to do this in England. For years, you'll keep an old telly, an old kettle, an old fire, bring it from the loft, plug it in, it was still working, and wonder why the electricity bill's gone through the roof, and you're still not any warmer than you were in the first place.
But there is a point here, Eric. You have to point out, yes, old things, electrical things, like human beings, cost more to run, right?
Yeah.
But modern equipment, modern electrical equipment, just doesn't work. We're now a throwaway society. We throw about... If you buy a kettle, right? You buy a kettle, costs you 15 quid now. Used to cost you 50 or 60, but now it costs you 15 quid. Switch it on. Push, gone. You have to take it back.
Okay, hold on a minute. Mark, what's the rules?
Well, if you buy a new item like that and pull it, gone. Which I thought was a very convincing imitation, actually.
Was, wasn't it? Yeah.
of a kettle. Well, I think you bloody well march back to the suppliers.
As long as you're not calling me a teapot.
and well, I mean, you know, the thing's going to be guaranteed for a year anyway. I mean, they're not going to resist that. I mean, quite frankly, you know, it should be guaranteed longer than that.
I agree with you, except I really truly believe, and this is my only conspiracy theory for this week, but I truly believe that these items are made to break just after your 12 months is up.
I knew that was coming.
And I have actually had, where I've been to companies, and I've actually won this, and so look, it's not my fault that it's only 3 weeks after the 12 months is up. I want a replacement, and I've actually won and got a replacement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, you're dead right, and if you want to know what the law is about that, you don't need to worry about the one-year guarantee or whatever's been given. The fact is that you're entitled to have the thing working for whatever is reasonably expected to be the life of it. So, for instance, if you spend 500 quid on a television or 600 quid on a television, you're not going to be expected after 1 year to go and have to fork out another 500-600 quid on a television. And I think that probably a good test is to ask if Sony tried to advertise their television as being, look, buy a fantastic television, it'll last you for a year, after that you may have to go and buy another one, would they sell any? And the answer, of course, is absolutely not.
I think that shows you
that you're entitled to a lot more for your money.
Right,
go to the courts, boys, go to the county courts and assert your rights.
Don't laugh. I know you're going to laugh, but don't laugh, both of you.
Not laughing.
If you're going to buy a kettle, there's one thing you should check out. Overboil.
Over what?
Overboil.
She was on the X Factor.
Because some kettles, when you boil them up, they don't switch off properly. We all expect them to, and they will carry on boiling and boiling and boiling, using your electricity when the water's already boiling. If you go around, look at reviews of the kettle and make sure they don't have some. I've seen some kettles that will boil for 20 seconds after the water's boiled. That's overboil. Make sure your kettle's actually a really good one, which brings me quickly on to have a look at measuring devices for your house. A lot of companies will now help you with those. And what they are is it's a device that you plug into the mains. It looks at what electricity and what components are using the electricity. And it's another one of these things. We know that kettles cost money. We know that electric blankets and bar heaters cost money. But we use them and then sort of worry about it later. This thing's actually going to stare you in the face and go, oh, you just put the kettle on, Lee. That's costing you X amount of kilowatts of power. And you think about it.
I agree with you. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Those are brilliant things. There's another top tip here on the practical level, right? Mm-hmm. Just talking about electrical equipment. When I was dealing in antiques, obviously, I used to get a lot of second-hand stuff. And I used to take tellies, all sorts, computers, tellies, and things like that, to a bloke, retired, who fixed them. And he said that the reason he could fix them all was basically because they all suffered for what he described as dry joints.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. That's right.
And wet joints are particularly difficult to...
Well, there you go. One of the other things that Mark and I spoke about in the office this morning was... We're all like, are you on a water meter, Lee?
I don't know. No, I'm not. No.
You're one of the few that isn't, then. Because nearly everybody's on water meters, which means...
I know, I could leave my tap running all day with immunity.
Oh, you're such a bad ego person. if you're going to... Typically, when you brush your teeth in the morning, you use a hand basin full of water to wash your teeth.
You just swill them out in the hand basin.
Yeah, I know. I got them in the jar at night. Whereas, if you think about it logically, you put water in, it's the water. There's nobody else touching it. Your toothbrush is your toothbrush. No one else is using it. It was sterile when you first got it, but it's been put in. Well, Lee's got. No, perhaps not. It's not sterile after Lee's used it. The toothpaste is. What you do is you fill up a glass, a sensible size glass, dip your brush in there, put your toothpaste on it, put it in your mouth, take the glass, rinse your mouth out, job done, exactly the same as before, but you haven't actually used, what did you reckon it was, Mark, 10 litres?
About 10 litres of water, yeah.
10 litres.
What, clean your teeth?
Yes!
The idea is if you leave your tap running the whole time, by the time you finish the whole job, you've probably gone through 10 litres. Probably right.
That doesn't matter. You paid for it.
Yes.
You paid for it, yeah. Here's a top tip for toothbrushes.
Go on.
When you're not using your toothbrush, if it's in the bathroom, put a little cap on top of your toothbrush to protect it. Because if you ablute and then flush the abluting thing, right... It splashes up to 8 feet into the air and lands on your toothbrush, and it can make you poorly.
Mm, it can, actually. It's the same as using those hand dryers in service stations. They just suck up dirty air from the floor and then stick it all back on your hands again. How bizarre is that? Mark, you mentioned earlier about Christmas coming up.
Yeah.
And how the kids...
Well done, Mark. Sorry.
No, it's a good thing. Very, 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 very true. If you take typically a small child who, let's face it, can often break technology, but they would like, and you and the missus would like, a games box for Christmas, go to one of the shops where they... I can't remember that name again. Somebody tell me. Where you used to put things in for Hock.
Pawnbrokers.
That's the one. No, don't mention the current
name.
No, but pawnbroker. That's the one.
Yeah.
Right, because you do find, and I know this for a fact, early adopters go and buy new items the minute they come out. You can see them all when Apple bring out the new latest something or other. They're queuing at the door, hundreds of them. They've already got the one before in their pocket, which is perfectly serviceable. There's nothing wrong with it. And yet... They'll take it down the pawn shop and just get a few quid for it. Yeah. Most of these guys, they look after this kit really well. So you go in there, you get this nice, pretty box under the Christmas tree. It's cost you 200% less than a brand new one. And the only difference is the processor.
Eric.
What?
You're conning your kids.
No, you're not.
Yes, you are.
No, you're not. Because the problem
with Eric is, right, give him an inch and he takes like a kilometre.
Blimey, that was good for you.
Here's for cheapskate then, because last year I gave my children each a Nintendo DS, which I'd actually bought broken off a certain auction website, and I repaired them. And they're working to this day. The kids are really happy, and I'm not bothered if they break them or not, because they hardly cost me anything.
True.
I got in trouble, actually, talking about that.
But there's a serious point there. What? Just think how much money you saved and recycled, and the kids are... Did the kids actually say, oh, Daddy, that's second-hand? No.
No, they didn't like the colour very much, but that was...
Did they know it was second-hand?
They did. They thought they were absolutely intrigued to see me repairing them.
There you
go. Excellent. No, I agree. In reality, I agree with you. Sure.
So I was intrigued to see me repairing them as well. Yes. And just, I mean, if anybody gets an idea that they can't do that, I got all the information I needed from YouTube.
There you go. Simple as that. So you can grab a bargain, and often from an early adopter who's selling something on, and they do put them on auction sites as well. And some, and most early adopters are actually really, really good with stuff. They don't break it, don't scratch it. They cover it in mothballs every day of the week when they put it in, back in the box. And it looks like brand new. What's the problem? What's the absolute problem?
I tend to agree with you. The thing is, from my side, though, like we were talking earlier, and I've always wanted an iPhone. I know people will say that I'm an idiot for wanting an iPhone, but I want one. But apparently, according to Art Eric, you get an iPhone for like £30 now.
You can get them ever so cheap because the second-hand market is there. And here's another top tip for you. You can get with most of the iPhones, and I'm not suggesting every revision is the same, so you need to check. But we all love GPS systems, sat-nav systems. You know, it's a great thing to have in your car. You can get free sat-nav applications, absolutely carte blanche, gratis, free, to go on modern-day phones, whether they're the Android type that Nokia makes or the iPhone type. There are applications because in a lot of the phones, the GPS stuff's already built in. It's just not active. So you go and buy one of these. How much do you pay for a sat-nav?
How much?
A couple of £100.
Yeah. So you can go and buy a second-hand phone from somewhere, put a free application on it, and then when you're driving down the road, make sure it's a female, because obviously you can argue with that, and then she can go, you're going the wrong way down the road. It's easy.
Another consumer test coming up. I'm going to go out next week, and I'm going to see how cheaply I can buy an iPhone.
And I'll bet you any money you can put a free GPS system onto Androids and iPhones. You can do it, and that's a lot cheaper than buying a sat-nav system. And whilst we're talking about shops, don't forget to haggle a bit.
Haggle.
Yeah. How many shops, guys, claim they will beat the best genuine offer published? How many shops do it?
Yeah, well, most of them do. And the trouble is that people, individuals, are very often very embarrassed to haggle. They have to get over it and start haggling and really starting to assert themselves and put themselves forward when they go to these shops and simply ask for a better price.
Well,
it's how you do it, isn't it? It's how you haggle. A lot of people are very aggressive about it.
No.
You just be nice about
it. I was really gentle. I have an iPhone and I wanted an iPhone. And I was in a shopping centre where the four main protagonists who sell iPhones were all there. And so I walked into the first one. And genuine story, my partner was like trying to find a hole to go into. Terribly embarrassed by all of this. But I walked into the shop and I said, can you give me the best price? Just write it down for me. I don't want a receipt. Write down on a piece of paper, what's your best price for this iPhone on this contract? And that's it. I don't want anything else. Don't sell me anything. I just want the price written down on a bit of your paper. Well, they were a bit bemused to start with, so I eventually got this bit of paper and I went to the next shop. I said, look, this is the price I've just been quoted from that shop round the corner. Can you beat it, yes or no? Bloke says, yeah, of course I can beat it. Give me your price. I went to the third shop. It went down again. I went back to the fourth shop and then back to the first one, and he got the business. But you know what? I got £70 off that price.
Very good.
That's amazing. The sad part.
But you must get it written down. Don't haggle. It's easy haggling. Get them to put it on some piece of paper that belongs to them. You go to the next shop, and they'll do it. The same with televisions.
Yeah.
In a shop, you will pay list price if they can get away with it. But if you trawl the internet for a couple of seconds, you can see, and there are genuine ones that they won't argue about because they are responsible, you know, names that sell goods. Mm.
I'm going to try it on a gallon of petrol.
Very quickly, let's move on to, before we give you some really fantastic the two top tips to come at the end, I want to look quickly, because I've been searching through the advertising campaigns that are going on. There's a site for broadcasty anoraks like me where you can go and have a look and see what people are actually advertising. Funnily enough, after the government this week says, you can't spend any money, all of a sudden, price comparison websites are advertising like crazy. How good are they?
I think there's been some research on comparison websites, and they don't necessarily come up with the best price. And of course, one of the things is that they will only really make comparisons between the people who subscribe to them, because at the end of the day, they get a cut. If you go through price comparison and then you click through and actually make a contract with somebody they recommend, they get a cut. And at the Consumer Action Group website, until recently, we actually tried our hands at maybe getting a little bit of advertising revenue by using a price comparison site. They offered us £50 for every sale that they made. Let me tell you, we never made a single one, but I was very impressed that they were prepared to offer us 50 quid. And that must mean that if you go and make your contract with the electricity company or what have you,
directly,
there's actually 50 quid extra in it for the price comparison site. Quite amazing.
Absolutely. So that's 50 quid you could put in your own pocket.
That's it. Well, that is a really interesting point.
Well, and I'll give, because I'm, and again, I know there's a lot of journalists that listen to this, and journalists do have a problem with car insurance. Not because we drink a lot, it's because we're self-employed and we're travelling to and from work. And it was really funny because I looked at some comparison sites before I came to Slovakia for insurance. And I quite genuinely went back to this wonderful old fella who's always been, you know, helpful with my insurance. And he said, there's only one thing, Eric, just make sure that your insurance is valid. Because if you don't give them the right data because you don't know to answer the questions the way they want them answered, you could end up with invalid insurance. And you know what? He was right.
Yeah, of course it is.
He really was. Talking of the site, Mark, I want to quickly do this thing about worrying phone calls. But I have to say, as a prefix, we are of the opinion that currently this particular device is a UK device. There may be others in your area where you're listening.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. And let me say that phone calls are a real problem. When I say phone calls are a real problem, what I mean is that, unfortunately, one of the things that Consumer Action Group deals with is an awful lot of people who, for some reason or other, are receiving phone calls that they don't want, either from banks or lenders or debt collectors or bailiffs or what have you. And very often the frequency and the nature of the calls, in other words, what's being said, can really get quite unacceptable and very upsetting.
Mark, we'll have to keep this brief. What does it actually do, please?
Right. Well, what we say then is that everybody should record their calls. Whenever you're dealing with any company, whether it's your bank or retailer or anybody, but particularly where there's money around or your energy supplier, you should be recording your calls. You have no idea the amount of times we find people on our site who are saying, well, I agreed this with them. They took my correct address. Well, they said they were going to do this. Mm-hmm. And later on, they denied it all. We always say, record the call. You don't need to give warnings if you're not using it commercially, if you're only using it for your private use. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the evidence. If you're looking for a Christmas present for yourself for the new year, which will really, I think, save you money and really sort of save your sanity with these things, get yourself a call recorder. We've come across one called Truecall.
Right.
T-R-U-E-C-A-L-L. Truecall don't know that I'm making this plug. We don't get any money from it, and I'd suggest that you buy it from Amazon because they seem to be the cheapest there.
How
Truecall,
much?
Truecall, I think it's about 100 quid. Which I think is quite a lot of money, but believe me, it's the only thing which will screen your calls, manage your calls, reject people you don't want to talk to, and record everything.
And we're going to move straight on to the last item, boys and girls, as we get to the end of part two. One of the things you must never do, if you're one of those communities around the world at the minute that are suffering and worried about your job, do not wait until your job's gone before you start looking for another one. I know that's job hunting is totally soul-destroying, and equally, it's very difficult because in today's world, you know, you'll go to one office and they say to you, I want it sent email PDF, please. You go to another one. They say, I want it in Word something. Then they'll want it in a DOCX file. It's very difficult when you're under stress, which you will be because you're now currently out of work. So don't wait. Don't wait. Do it now. To put your CV out there into the marketplace.
And it's a very good site, isn't it?
Well, it's just come online. And the good news is for consumers, it's free. You don't pay. And what they do is they will even advise you on your CV and they'll track it for you, which means you don't have to sort of like make hundreds of phone calls because that costs you a lot of money. Actually, putting things in the post costs a lot of money, and most of them end up in the rubbish bin anyway. So what these guys do is they give you instant online feedback about your application. look at the jobs around everywhere that's applicable to you, and they even help you run a diary and organise follow-up calls and interviews. It takes the pressure off you a bit, and it's kind of like having an agent out there. And I would strongly urge anybody who's in one of the communities that's under threat of government cuts, you know, Ministry of Defence cuts, and you're thinking, where's my job coming next year? Don't wait till next year. Go to Job Savvy, and we'll put this on all of the links for you. Mark's absolutely right. We should do this with all the programmes, actually.
Can I just give one more word of advice on that? Once again, I'm sorry to come it from this direction, but I'm afraid that maybe that comes with the territory of running the Consumer Action Group.
Sure.
If during the year you start to get at all worried about your job, you feel that maybe it's starting to go wrong, maybe they're looking to move people out of the company, start keeping a diary. Make notes of everything that happens, every conversation, any incident. Keep a diary, keep a diary, keep a diary. Because later on, you may have a basis to go back and make a complaint. You have to move very quickly, but you may well find that you will get some advantage if you've been very meticulous about documenting every aspect that's led up to you leaving your job.
And at that point, we've got a leave postcard from Pop Rad Boys and Girls. That was it, a very special one this week. Hopefully, you got some top tips out of it. It will be on all the sites with the links that we've mentioned today. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Mark. And we'll see you next week. Take care, boys and girls. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
RTI.